Hi, this is Sony Artisan of Imagery Thibaut Roland, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
This episode is sponsored by our friends at FreshBooks. Springtime means tax time, and their cloud-based accounting software helps freelance photographers and small business owners get their lives back and get back to shooting by making paperwork a breeze. To sign up for your 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you, FreshBooks, for your support. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 57. Strobist David Hobby sticks up for consumers. In this episode, lighting expert David Hobby schools MagMod, Time Magazine runs a controversial cover, Adobe Camera Raw gets a new look, the Panasonic GH4 gets some cool new features via firmware, a photo contest in Japan pulls the plug, and Travis in Australia wants to know how best to deal with organizing race photos. All that and more in episode 57 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much for opening the show, Thibaut. I greatly appreciate it. A Frenchman living in Beantown. That's Boston, Mass, of course. Thibaut Roland is a Sony artisan imagery, a ninja master of incredible fine art long exposure photography, and also a good friend. If you enjoy the work of Michael Kenna, you're really going to enjoy the stunning photography of Thibaut Roland. I know I'm biased here because he's a friend, but I can't even adequately describe how amazing his work is. You'll just have to see it for yourself. It's the kind of work you can picture on your walls, and you'd pay to see at a gallery. In fact, many have. My friend Thibaut Roland is a true artist, a gentleman, and I believe he's one of the most important photographers out there today. Fire up the computer and head on over to his website at thibaultroland.com, and you're going to see some amazingly toned images that'll just blow your mind. And I'd like to thank you for joining us here in episode 57 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. We're also proud to announce that we were handpicked by the streaming audio service Spotify to be the very first photography podcast in that service. There are hundreds of photography podcasts out there, and we were chosen, so we are so thankful for that, and we really appreciate the recognition. And as always, we appreciate you telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. If you're into off-camera flash, then you're familiar with the name David Hobby from the incredibly popular Strobist blog. In fact, David made OCF accessible to the masses with his detailed instruction and his great inspiration. So he knows his stuff. Undeniably, no one will tell you that David Hobby doesn't know what he's talking about when it comes to lighting. And if they do, walk the other way, because that's not a person you want to talk to. They don't know what they're talking about. So when Hobby calls you out publicly on the claims that you're making about your product, A, it's going to be accurate, and B, it's going to get a lot of attention. What I'm talking about is a tweet that he put out about MagMod's MagBeam, which we covered recently here on the podcast. On Thursday, March 17th, 2016, he said this, quote, 100% BS. A Fresnel cannot increase power in any way. It can only concentrate a beam, end quote. Now, he actually used the full word, but I'm using BS instead, as we wish to keep our clean rating here on the podcast. Along with those words, he posted a screenshot from MagMod, which said this, quote, the MagBeam is a revolutionary new Fresnel lens modifier that gives you increased power output, a killer beam pattern, and projection masks, gobos and cookies, that turn your flash into a pattern-projecting thing of wonder. The MagBeam brings you ninja-style light shaping in a fast, easy, and simple package. It comes with a telephoto lens for a laser-like precision beam with 2 to 3 additional stops of light output. End quote. Now Hobby circled in red the increased power and 2 to 3 additional stops parts and included the poop with eyes emojis to illustrate his point. We've talked on a few occasions via email. He seems like a great guy, and he's always been an advocate for consumers, especially when it comes to lighting products. Bottom line, David Hobby doesn't want to see people getting taken advantage of or buy something misleading. And I'm not talking specifically this product. I'm just talking in general here. The Petapixel mothership reached out to him, and he says that he stands by what he said, but that it could have been worded better, perhaps. You know, I appreciate David Hobby's honesty. He definitely doesn't sugarcoat it, and I really appreciate that about him. He told us, quote, "I do think that the MagMod folks are at least to some degree playing on the ignorance of their backers. They make the claim that the MagBeam gives increased power output. This is absolutely false. Unless the beam has a capacitor and or a battery hidden in there somewhere, it's impossible. I tweeted to them about it. I would have hoped for a response to the effect of, we certainly are not trying to confuse people and would not want them to think that a simple Fresnel can add power to a flash. No response. Instead, they favorited a tweet from a user who thought it did add more power. The thing is, they do not have to mislead people to make money. A Fresnel isn't magic. It takes a wide beam pattern and concentrates it into a very narrow but brighter beam. My point is that you can sell a product without misleading the less knowledgeable folks about what it does. But you can apparently sell a lot more of the product if you are willing to mislead them. $200,000 is a strong motivator, I guess." End quote. The $200,000 US that he's talking about is how much has been raised thus far in the Kickstarter campaign for the MagBeam product. In fact, it still has about 25 days to go as I record this, so that will definitely continue to grow even through this little bit of controversy. Now, MagMod finally responded to Hobby saying this, quote, "Mr. Hobby questioned our use of the words increased power output, and we can understand why. The MagBeam has no ability to increase the energy, watt seconds, that is generated by a flash. But by using a Fresnel lens, you can collimate or concentrate the light into a specific spot. By collimating the light, you increase the amount of light hitting your subject. We believe that our customers, with all our products to date, know that we are not attempting to mislead anyone through exaggerated claims." End quote. You know, unless you're in someone's head or you're privy to their marketing meetings, one really can't say with 100% certainty the motivation that was behind describing the MagBeam, right? As they pointed out in a lengthy statement on Petapixel, many others in the industry have described their lighting products in a similar way. Now, that doesn't excuse it, of course, but it's an explanation, perhaps. I've had some interaction with the MagMod folks in the past, and they seem really nice, and personally, I don't think they were trying to mislead. But David Hobby is, of course, correct. He knows his stuff. The MagBeam is not going to increase the output, and saying it does just isn't correct. It's not going to put out 2 to 3 more stops of light. And that's exactly what they said it would do. They actually said 2 to 3 more stops of light. And that's just not correct. You know, it's my hope that what comes out of this is a better understanding of what light can do and what it cannot. And those that are making products like this will hopefully do a better job of conveying that. Because if you don't, arguably the world's leading expert in off-camera flash will make sure that you're taking care of customers. Next. Over the years, we've seen nude pregnant women gracing the covers of magazines, and it's a celebration of motherhood. But in the case of the March 21st, 2016 cover of the International Edition of Time magazine, it highlights a really sad part of some wars, and that is conflict rape. The powerful photograph, made even more powerful by the overlaid text, features a Sudanese woman named Ayak who was repeatedly raped by soldiers during the civil war in South Sudan. She was photographed by renowned war photographer Lindsay Adario, who herself was a victim of wartime sexual assault after being captured by the Libyan army back in 2011. The striking cover photo is for a story entitled The Secret War Crime, Ending the Source of Conflict Rape. And after it was shared last week, it immediately received a huge backlash. One Twitter user named Zoe S. said this in a series of tweets, quote, "Hi, Time. I have so many questions about this wildly exploitative cover. So if Ayak is a rape survivor and vulnerable, why is she nearly naked on the cover of your magazine? Would you have put a naked Bosnian woman on your cover to discuss systematic rape during the genocide, or is that distasteful?" End quote. Now, those were across 3 tweets, for those of you who are going to point out that that was clearly more than 140 characters, but you get the point. Now, personally, I don't see the controversy here. This woman wasn't forced to be photographed, and I'm going out on a huge limb But I'm thinking that she knew exactly what she was doing, right? She wanted to show the world that she's pregnant as a result of being raped during war. Something that has impact and really can't be conveyed in a better way, can it? In a separate Time article, the photographer Dario said, quote, "Once I went over the guidelines with IAC, in terms of how she felt about being photographed, given that her image would be seen by thousands around the world, I spent several hours with her. We sat down with IAC and discussed my vision for her portrait, and she didn't hesitate at all. She understood what I was trying to convey, and as I photographed, I showed her the images on my camera to ensure she understood what I was capturing. It seemed that the very act of photographing IAC with her unborn child gave her the opportunity to celebrate the very thing her perpetrators had tried to rob from her, her beauty and her dignity." End quote. We took a poll on petapixel.com, and of the more than 900 respondents who took the poll, 74% thought it was a good choice to use this cover, 16.5% said they were indifferent about it, and 9.5% thought it was a bad choice. You know, I think overall people get it. It's an important story, the subject was fully on board, wanted to convey a message, and not everything is pleasant in life, but sometimes it needs to be seen. Photography is powerful and can affect change. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy. And so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with your photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be out shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem, making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And the FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pictures of your receipts and organize them later so you have them ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You know, they believe in this podcast and we want to support them, right? You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to doing what we all love to do, taking photos and editing them. On average, FreshBooks users get paid nearly a week faster when accepting online payments through their system, cut 2 days a month out of administrative tasks, and double their revenue in the first 24 months. That is amazing. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers, and that's huge. Right now, FreshBooks is offering our listeners a free 30-day trial, so make sure you take advantage of that. Go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the how did you hear about us section. That's PETAPIXEL, of course. Thank you so much, FreshBooks, for your support. If you use Adobe Camera Raw, you'll be happy to hear that ACR version 9.5 finally has a UI that matches that of Photoshop. Finally. No longer is Adobe Camera Raw the redheaded stepchild of the Adobe photo editing software family, as the most recent version of Adobe's RAW conversion software now has the more modern user interface that matches the look and feel of Photoshop and Bridge. Of this, Adobe says, quote, "Your color scheme within Camera Raw will mimic Photoshop and Bridge, and you can change your color scheme by visiting the interface preferences within the host application," end quote. So now you've got the more subdued, darkened experience, which makes it a whole lot easier to concentrate on your photos. You want everything darkened around it, and now you're going to have that in Adobe Camera Raw. It's been in Bridge and Photoshop for a while now. With this update, of course, is the standard bug fixes, as well as support for a bunch of new cameras, including the Canon 80D, the T6, the 1DX Mark II, Nikon's D5, D500, the Sony A6300, and a handful of others. Also released was the latest version of Lightroom CC and Lightroom 6.5 with all the usual bug fixes and camera compatibility for those as well. So if you use any of those, have at it because they're available right now. Next. If you're a Panasonic Lumix GH4 shooter, and there's a lot of you guys out there, you'll be happy to hear that the company has released firmware version 2.5 with a couple of really sweet new features. The first is Panasonic's new post-focus feature, which captures each photo as multiple shots with rapid-fire focus bracketing. This allows you to choose focus afterward by tapping on an area on your screen. That's pretty cool. You know, think Lytro here, but in a much cooler, more functional package. The second really nice feature is 4K photo. which has three different modes, 4K Burst, 4K Burst Start Stop, and 4K Pre-Burst. This gives you the ability to capture still photos with an ultra-fast frame rate of 30 frames per second, making it easy to capture a large number of shots with you choosing the best frame later. Not the best way to do photography. A lot of people are predicting that eventually we're just going to shoot video and then pull frames from it, but that's not really photography anymore now, is it? The firmware also adds support for external flash burst, which makes this camera compatible with a handful of Panasonic flash units while doing continuous shooting. Version 2.5 of the firmware will be released at the end of March 2016 and is going to be available through the Lumix customer support site. You know, the GH4 is already a really cool mirrorless Micro Four Thirds body, and with these additions, it just got even better. Next. If you're going to have a photo contest, maybe, just maybe, don't pick a photo of a man standing atop a dead whale. No good is ever going to come from that. Well, every year the Okto Sea Museum in northern Hokkaido, Japan has a photo contest. This year they received 118 entries, and of those, the judges apparently thought it was a good idea to pick an image of a man fist pumping while he stands atop a beached whale. A whale that was dead. Sea Museum, dead whale photo. Yeah, you wouldn't have thought that would win the top prize, huh? And yet it did. Well, it didn't take very long before the public expressed its outrage, with one saying, quote, "I am very, very sad as a person who loves the nature of Hokkaido," end quote. Amazingly, one of the judges, Kaiko Fuji of the Hokkaido Photography Association, said this, quote, "I thought the whale was alive, and he had courage to climb on top of it, and I was moved. It can be said the young man succeeded in accomplishing a rarely seen feat," end quote. Huh? What now? What's that all about? They presumably voted for this photo because they thought some fool was brave enough to go, I don't know, climb a live whale that was on a beach, because that's where live whales just hang out, right? Clearly this person does not know a lot about sea life, or maybe photography. I don't know. That's just ridiculous. Now, the museum has since revoked the prize, canceled this year's contest, and has apologized for its decision. A spokesperson for the museum says, quote, "We lacked consideration and awareness despite being an organization that studies the natural environment. We will reflect on this seriously as we offended many people," end quote. You know, I don't know how this stuff happens, but it did. And of course, it's going to happen again. Maybe not for them, but it'll happen. Why? Because there's a lot of foolish people out there who apparently think that it's okay to abuse animals or take photos with dead animals, and that's somehow a good thing. It is not. Next. Today's listener question comes from Travis in Australia, who sent in his question via our voicemail widget.
G'day, Sharky. It's Travis here from Australia with a quick question I'm hoping you can help me with. I do event photography occasionally, and I end up with heaps and heaps of photos, and I'm reliant on being able to read the race plate number and enter it into keywords. So when I upload it on the site, people can then search and find their photo of them themselves. My workflow is through Lightroom, and I just haven't found an easy way to go through and tag photos. Hopefully, somewhere out there, there's OCR, or optical character recognition software, that could go through and tag all the easy photos and just let me have the harder ones. Some people have suggested uploading the photos to the net and getting somebody else somewhere else to actually do it. But my concern with that is that they don't have a vested interest in entering the right number. And if they don't enter the right number, I may as well not have taken the photo, because the athlete's never going to have found it, and I've just wasted my time cropping, processing, and uploading the photo. So at the moment, I rely on family and friends, but I would love to find out a more elegant solution, I guess. Hoping you can help. And cheers.
Thank you so much, Travis, for leaving your question. I greatly appreciate it. Unfortunately, brother, I don't know a good way to automate going through photos and having it read the race plate number and separating those out for you. If there's software that could do that task, that would be awesome. And if anyone in our audience knows it, go ahead and email me, lensshark@gmail.com, because I'd love to know that. I really feel your pain. I know what it's like to go through thousands of photos from a race, knowing that you could make money if the runner, the bike rider, etc., could just find photos of themselves. After all, very few people are going to take the time to go through all those photos just to find a handful of themselves, right? No one has that kind of time or patience. And if that software existed, then you need to kick those out into separate galleries or something, and then maybe match them with the names of the riders or racers or whatever, so they're searchable that way as well. It is just such a nightmare. You know, I've had to deal with this myself in the past, and the amount of time that you put into it, as you know, starts to make you wonder if it's worth it or not. But you want a solution. Now, since I don't know of software that's going to make this easy on you and the others who are going to encounter this challenge, I have some ideas. And they both involve making it easier for the racers or riders or whoever to find their photos to the extent that you can, of course. Now, if you're able to narrow them down by age group, the heat that they're in, a particular race, etc., that's going to greatly help. But that's obvious, of course. Instead of thousands, they're maybe going to be looking through hundreds of photos. That might be more doable. Maybe a couple hundred photos. You get in the 800-900 range, I don't know, maybe they're not going to look through them. Now, my second idea involves being more selective, and I think this is what's really going to help you. And I'm talking about being more selective in how you shoot, as well as more selective in what you're presenting to them. If you can train yourself to shoot less, you'll be helping yourself out greatly. Now, sure, we all want to have that amazing shot, but you know what? Most aren't going to care. They're just looking for a memory from that day, right? If you were shooting for a publication, of course you'd want the best photo. You would go through your photos quickly, pick out two or three, write your captions, and call it good. But you're wanting to get all the photos together of these people and have them be able to see it so they can purchase them. And sadly, good enough may be good enough. But hey, if it saves you time and makes you money, then perhaps you can set aside the desire to get the best shot possible. You know, I know that's going to sound like blasphemy to some, but it's like photographing a large group. You're not making art. You just need to see their faces. So maybe you can get a photo or two of them and call it good. But most of your work, however, is going to be culling the photos from all the races. And for that, I would highly recommend Photo Mechanic. It is incredibly fast. Photojournalists have been using it for years. There is just no time to go through photos in Lightroom when you're on deadline or you're trying to get through a huge, huge volume of photos. Photo Mechanic comes to the rescue. And there's other programs out there that can do it as well. You don't need 8 shots of the same person, which mostly looks the same, when 1 or 2 would suffice. Now, if you follow these guidelines, I think you'll at least make it a lot easier on your family and friends and yourself when they're going through those photos. This is the bane of the existence of pretty much everyone who shoots races and is trying to sell those photos later. And to that end, I don't think it would hurt at all to reach out to other photographers who shoot these events and see what's working for them. Crowdsource this thing, right? Contact 10 other photographers who shoot races, see what they do, and surely somebody who's been doing this for a while has come up with a perfect solution, or at least one that's going to save you a lot of time. I really appreciate you taking the time to ask me this question, but they're definitely going to know better than I, because they're dealing with it all the time. There's got to be a solution out there. I think it's also important to look at it from a dollar standpoint too. Is it really worth your time? If the answer is yes, then that's great. But if you're not making much money from it, maybe find a quicker way to get through the photos using one or more of my suggestions or something that you find out from another photographer that you've asked and jettison a lot of that frustration. The goal is to shoot, quickly cull the photos, get them online so people can buy them, and move on. I think that if racers have a smaller, more narrowed down batch of photos to look through, then that's going to greatly help. You know, if they know where they were in a particular race compared to the others in the photos, they might actually be able to find their photos way more quickly than you think. And then it's a moot point. If you have only your best photos up, they can always contact you to ask you if you have more, right? So many shooters feel like they need to have every single photo of a racer that they've shot available, when the truth often is that they're only going to be buying one photo out of 15 or so of them anyhow. And if you had 5 up there for them to choose from, they would still probably only buy one. Or maybe they'd buy 2 because they wouldn't have to search through everything. So if you have a more narrowed selection, I think you're actually going to see that your sales are going to be about the same or maybe even higher, and it's going to save you so much more time. And that's more time that you have available to shoot other things, spend time with your family and friends, etc. Thank you so much again, Travis, for taking the time to ask your question. I hope that helps. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 57 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. And don't forget, you can help support this show by supporting our sponsor, FreshBooks. Go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 58. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.